The best they could make out next morning was that 4, maybe 5 Indians attempted the raid on the stock. Spots of red in the dry grass proved Jameson at least winged a would-be horse thief. Ransom King came out to look over the sign.
From now on, we'll keep 2 men on guard at all times in 1-hour shifts. With the stock inside the circle and that black dog around, we shouldn't have any trouble.
Maybe all the trouble won't be from the Indians.
Jameson looked sharply at him.
What's that supposed to mean?
There's a lot of loose talk drifting around the camp. They're saying, some of them, that you're not ever going to find any buffalo. They're saying they don't mind Indian risk when they're skinning hides and making money, but they're not getting any hides.
What do you think, King?
If I didn't believe in you, I wouldn't have joined you with my wagons.
Sometime that night, someone shook Jameson's shoulder. He sat up quickly, reaching for the pistol, thinking the Indians were back. But it was a hide handler named Ludlow, a silent, morose, black-bearded man who never mixed with the others, always stayed to himself.
I think some of the boys have shook the harness, Jameson. Tully is gone. I don't know how many of the others.
Jameson stood up angrily, throwing aside the blankets.
Tully had guard duty just before me. He was supposed to wake me up when it come time to relieve him. Never did.
There was another man on guard. Where's he?
One of Tully's buddies. He's gone, too.
Jameson stomped out into the wagon circle.
Everybody up!
As the men gathered in the darkness, he mentally counted them off. 3 gone. Tully and the other 2 old Miles and Posey hands. It was too dark to check the livestock, but Jameson knew within reason that they had taken a horse apiece. Saddles, too, and he had few of those. He saw his own bay hunting horse standing nearby and felt relief that they hadn't gotten him. The rest of the men now knew what had happened. He could not tell by their faces whether they were considering trying the same. Shad Blankenship watched Jameson closely as the anger played in his face.
Nothing you can do about it now, Gage. They're gone.
We're gonna do something. If we don't, some of the rest may pull the same stunt.
At the first paling of the night sky, Jameson was up and punched Shad awake. The cook got up, too. Pruitt soon had coffee boiling for them, and a bait of antelope meat was ready by the time the 2 saddled their horses. Jameson impatiently wolfed his down, swung into the saddle, and spurred out. Shad, a slow eater, caught up to him after a while. Jameson was moving into a long-reaching trot, sometimes in a lope, his grim eyes following horse tracks in the grass. The thick turf kept the hooves from cutting into the ground much, but the brittle grass, broken underfoot, made a trail a man could read. All morning they rode, slowing down to save the horses when it became clear that they weren't going to make a fast catch. Sometime past noon, Jameson began to regret his haste in eating breakfast. Hunger commenced to tug at him. The long ride over the unchanging prairie had drained the anger from him, leaving only a stolid determination. He would catch those men if he had to ride all the way back to the Cimarron. Presently, Shad reached back into his saddlebags and brought out a little bundle done up in oilskin.
Cold biscuits and meat. Good thing I come. You'd have starved flat to death.
Jameson grinned then, relaxing from the grimness that had held him. They stopped at a little stream and watered and rested the horses. Impatience prickled Jameson, but judgment told him to wait. Though he could push himself till he dropped, he couldn't ever afford to overpush the horses. He sat and drummed his nervous fingers on his boots, while Shad Blankenship lay so relaxed that Jameson couldn't tell whether he was napping or not. Presently, they were on the go again, pushing as hard as they dared. Along late in the afternoon, Jameson reined up and squinted at something far ahead.
What does that look like to you, Shad?
Shad stared, his eyes narrowed against the sun, the reddish brows knitted up close.
It's them. They're resting by that creek yonder.
Jameson waited a moment before he moved out, looking for a way to ride in close without being seen. He reined the bay around, riding back the way they had come until he passed down under a rise and well out of sight. Then he angled westward, crossing the creek and coming up in cover of underbrush. Near the quarry, the 2 men reined in to study the situation closer.
Asleep, I reckon. All 3 of them. Must have rode half the night and all day. Horses about give out, I reckon, and the men too. If we was Comanches, we could get us 3 juicy new scalps.
We're not looking for scalps, Shad. I just aim to get them horses back.
Dismounting, they tied their own horses. Saddle guns in hand, they eased forward. The creek was shallow, the water not reaching quite to the tops of Jameson's black boots as they waded across. The leather was so heavily greased that little of it would seep through. The two got within 20 yards of the sleeping men. One of the horses suddenly raised its head and whinnied. Tully jerked erect, blinking and feeling desperately for the rifle that lay beside him.
Don't touch it. Just stand up there and leave it alone, the rest of you the same.
The other two were awake now. One glared at the other.
Thought you was gonna keep watch.
Shut up.
Tully turned to Jameson.
All right, so you caught up with us. Now I guess you're taking us back.
No, I don't want you back. I don't want to have to watch you all the time we're out.
And what did you trail us for?
Those horses. They're mine.
The runaway stiffened. Tully licked his dry lips.
Look, Jameson, this is the middle of Comanche country. You wouldn't set a man afoot out here, would you?
You'll have your guns, and you're halfway to the Cimarron already. Walk all night and hide all day. You can be in Dodge in a couple of weeks if you get high behind.
Tully's eyes were frightened. He looked down at his rifle on the ground, then up at Jameson, but he didn't dare make the try.
Pick up their guns, Shad. We'll carry them with us a ways, then drop them off.
The men looked around them at these endless plains, which reached on into infinity. They were awesome enough to a man on horseback, but they were terrifying to a man afoot. Jameson could see dread settle over the runaways like a black shroud.
Jameson is the worst thing you could do to a man.
Not quite. Hanging's rougher. That's what horse thieves generally get.
He waited until Shad brought up their horses. Mounting, he started to push the three runaways' mounts southward again. Then he stopped just long enough to untie canteens and sacks of supplies from behind two saddles and let them drop to the ground. He gave them this gesture of mercy, and this one only. After they had ridden a while, pushing the three horses in front of them, Jameson dropped the guns to the ground and looked back. The three men trailed them at a walk, a far piece behind. They wouldn't get to the rifles in time to use them. Chad Blankenship grinned.
I've been worried all day what you was going to do when you caught up to them. I was afraid this morning you was fixing to shoot all three.
This morning I was mad enough to.
It was well past midnight by the stars when Jameson's instinct led him to the camp and he saw the red glow of campfire coals, kept barely alive by the succession of guards. They turned the horses loose. Then, before he did anything else, Jameson walked around the camp, grimly counting the men rolled up in their blankets. Ransom King sat at the remains of the campfire, drinking black coffee which Pruitt kept on the coals all night for the guards. He didn't get up as Jameson and Chad approached wearily. He sat there, watching. Jameson poured himself a cup of coffee, and Chad followed suit. Jameson sat on his heels, his eyes touching Ransom King. King silently studied him a while before he brought out the question. The way he said it, it wasn't really a question at all.
You fetch back the horses, but no men.
Yeah, they won't be coming back.
King's eyebrows arched, and in the firelight his gaze dropped to Jameson's gun.
I didn't shoot them, but by the time they walk all the way back to Dodge, they may wish I had.
King poured the dregs of coffee out into the grass, pushed to his feet, and stood there, some dark humor seeming to stir him.
You've got a soft streak in you, Jameson. I'd have shot him.
He walked off into the darkness, toward his wagon. Shad Blankenship watched him disappear.
He would have, too. He's got it in his eyes.
Jameson nodded. He remembered the fury in King's eyes that night the man rescued him in the Dodge Saloon. He knew King could catch a fire as easily as he could break into wild laughter. Jameson finished his coffee, letting it drive out the chill the night air had settled on him. Then he crawled into his own blankets, but he didn't sleep. He lay awake, listening, watching. Sometime up in the morning, Shad Blankenship's snoring broke off. He lay quiet a little, then raised up on one elbow.
You ain't ever been asleep, have you?
Jameson shook his head. Weariness was stone heavy on him, but worry was heavier. There was a little of admiration in the old man's voice, and admiration didn't come lightly to Shad Blankenship.
Then sleep. Nobody's fixing to slip away this far up in the morning. Anyhow, I'll watch. Don't take much sleep for an old man.
Jameson hadn't expected the men to like the way he had set the runaways afoot. He wasn't much surprised then when at breakfast he felt the hostile eyes of some of the crew upon him. They didn't say anything. They didn't have to. But he could smell revolt in the air, just as he could smell a faint hint of winter in the dawn wind. He ate in silence, counting those men he felt might side with him, and the count didn't come to much. Only two men were left with whom he had ever worked, Shad Blankenship and Messick. Looking at Reb Pruitt, he mentally gave him a question mark.
Yeah, what about Pruitt?
This small, thin man was a good cook, and Jameson had an idea he was a scrapper from way back yonder in spite of his flapping jaw. But Jameson was a Yankee, and so was the rest of the crew. He didn't think Pruitt was going to get worked up much over any kind of a fight between Yankees. More likely, he would sit on his hands and grin as he watched it. He glanced at the hide handler, Ludlow, who sat to himself now as he ate. He made friends with no man, and he never spoke except when it was necessary to the work. Jameson shook his head. No, he didn't think Ludlow would help him either. There would be no one except Shad Blankenship and Messick, and maybe Ransom King. Maybe. One thing certain, Jameson couldn't afford to get out of sight of the camp. It was his conviction that most of the crew, maybe all of it, would appropriate horses and mules and head north the minute he was gone over the hill.
Shad, I've been trying to keep north so we wouldn't have so far to go if we were forced to run for it. But now I'm pointing them south, across the Canadian. We'll find Buffalo if we have to drive all the way to the Rio Grande.
Jameson allowed himself to ride as far ahead as he could without letting the wagons drop back out of his sight. They crossed over the Sandy Canadian, fighting its treacherous undercurrent much as they had done at the Cimarron. Then they pushed on south, angling a little westward. Long days came and went, and long nights in which Jameson slept little or not at all, trusting hardly anyone anymore. Bone weariness and the lack of sleep sank his eyes back deep beneath his brows, put an aching slump in his shoulders. But he kept on riding, kept on watching the men, kept on looking for buffalo. In camp at evening, the men gathered silently around a poker game that started as soon as supper was over and lasted far into the night. Almost invariably, the winner was the man who promoted the game, a short, fat little skinner named Blair Farley, a man with a loud, quarrelsome voice and thick, stubby fingers which were amazingly efficient with a deck of cards. His greedy eyes seemed able to read a man's thoughts. Already, his pocket was stuffed with IOUs against half the wages the men might expect to earn on this expedition, if they found buffalo. This, too, was making the crew surly, knowing that much of their pay already was gone. It added to the charge of tension that slowly built up in the camp. Sometimes, even Shad Blankenship's eyes turned longingly to that poker game. Then one day about noon, Jameson heard a shout and blinked quickly at a movement atop a promontory half a mile southward. Shad Blankenship had ridden out on a scout. Now he came spurring his dun horse, the dust rising behind him. One thought raced to Jameson's mind. Comanches. He reached down for his saddle gun.
Look sharp, it may be trouble.
But it wasn't trouble. Shad eased up on the speed as he loped in. He drew rein and stopped the heaving horse just in front of Jameson. A wide grin cut across his dusty, red-bearded face.
We found them, Gage. They're over that hill yonder and down the valley. A million of them. We found the buffalo.
The weariness seemed to lift from Jameson's wide shoulders and the burning tiredness from his blue eyes as he stepped stiffly off his horse atop the hill. He gazed down the creek with its scattering of big cottonwoods, its banks lined with smaller timber. His look moved on out across the level prairie where not a mesquite or sagebrush blocked the view. His pulse quickened.
My sweet Lord.
There they were, the buffalo, scattered in small grazing bunches as uncountable as the stars in a crisp night sky, fly specks out yonder far as a man could see. They brought up bittersweet memories of old days on the Republican and the Arkansas, times that vanished with the high plains wind. There were bunches of cows, many of them trailed by big, stocky, glossy calves, blackish-brown now after shedding the reddish hair of their first months. Some calves grazed alone, already weaned. And among the cows, he could see young spike bulls, not old enough yet to challenge the big bulls for mastery, not ready to take their place as sires. The older bulls grazed separately now, in little groups of three or four to as many as 20. Breeding season was over. Far out yonder, amid the specks of black, Jameson saw a band of antelope and a big gray timber wolf sneaking along looking for the crippled or sick, the buffalo warily eyeing him, an occasional bull tossing his head threateningly.
You'll get him, old man.
Jameson watched a pair of old bulls and a buffalo wallow, rolling in the dust, digging in with their horns and throwing dirt high over their backs with their massive heads, trying to drive away the buffalo gnats. Presently, the wagons came. Men walked to the top of the hill to gaze out upon the sight. The threat of rebellion had disappeared like a wisp of smoke. No one shouted. No one jumped up and down. Men stared silently. They stood there a long time as if they couldn't see enough of it, as if they had never seen buffalo before. Blair Farley forgot all about poker.
Damn.
Messick stood mesmerized.
Didn't know I'd ever get to see this again.
Even the somber Ludlow, who had never shown any emotion except an everlasting contempt for his fellow man, softened and smiled a little, squatting on the grass and unconsciously wetting a skinning knife against the black leather tops of his high boots.
You men just stay here and look a while. Shad and I are gonna hunt a good place to make camp.
The creek flowed in a northerly direction, emptying into the Canadian somewhere above. The two men rode southward toward the head of it. Bands of buffalo scattered away from water. The animals would run off away, then stop, and turn to look back with their tiny, weak eyes, water dripping from the long, stringy beards that sometimes almost dragged the ground.
Ain't got much fear for a man on horseback, have they? Ain't been chased much, maybe none at all.
That's a hopeful sign. Means the Indians haven't been hunting around here.
Jameson picked a flat spot high up enough from the creek bed so that a sudden rise of floodwater wasn't likely to wash away the camp, yet close enough so that water carrying would not become burdensome. A few big cottonwoods there would spread shade over the men working in camp during the heat of the autumn afternoons. Smaller timber would provide fuel for the fires and poles for the rough, semi-permanent corrals that would take the place of the wagon circle in protecting the stock at night. Jameson saw more buffalo grazing upwind along the creek.
Shad, you go bring the wagons. I'll try to get us some fresh meat.
He slipped the saddle gun out of the scabbard, circled around downwind of the buffalo, and came up behind them. When he was close enough, he let them see him. They started down the creek toward the campsite, shuffling along in a trot. He picked out a nice fat cow, which either hadn't had a calf this year or had already weaned it so she could store up flesh to carry the next calf already conceived within her. He let her pass on through the campsite so there wouldn't be any lingering smell from the butchering. When she was about right, he spurred in and fired at her from the saddle, aiming at her lungs. The second shot slowed her, and the third shot brought her to the ground. Jameson stepped down from the horse, dropped the reins, and moved up. Taking care that she didn't thrash her head and catch him on those sharp curved horns, he stepped in with his thick-bladed ripping knife and cut her throat to bleed her and lessen the risk of spoiling the meat. Soon, the wagons arrived. The crew began setting up camp, unloading gear, emptying several wagons, which would be used to haul fresh green hides back to camp as the kill got underway. Messick and another skinner set to work on the cow Jameson had killed. They slit through the jawbone first and took out the tongue. They ripped the hide up the belly and skinned out the legs past the knee. With their curved skinning knives, they began to lay the hide back away from the flesh, working from the belly downward toward the backbone on one side, then straining together as they turned the heavy carcass over to skin out the other. Normally, they would hitch a pair of mules to peel the hide off once they got it started, but this kill was for meat, and the hide under the carcass would help to keep it clean. Jameson put the other men to work chopping posts and poles for corrals and digging holes to set the posts in. With a purpose before him now, something there that he could see, he no longer felt his weariness. Having something to work for gave him new wind and new will. Jameson walked back and forth through camp 100 times, making plans, directing work, pitching in where it wasn't going fast enough. When it looked as if the corral job was moving along satisfactorily, he walked out to the flat area downwind of camp, the hide drying and stretching ground. It had to be cleared of tree limbs, dead stumps, and other obstructions. By dark, the fence posts were up. The poles hadn't been laid between them, and there wasn't time now before night. but long ropes tied to the posts made a handy enough substitute for one night.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow.
He flopped down across his bedroll, savoring the good dry smell of burning wood and thinking he would rest a while before supper. When he awoke, the sun was coming up red on the cloudless eastern horizon. Someone, Shad of course, had spread blankets over him to protect him from the night chill. He pushed them back and grinned sheepishly at the old man who sat cross-legged, studying him with amusement in the glow of dawn light.
Thanks, Shad.
Shad made a forget-it motion with his big old freckled hand.
You look a heap sight better this morning. Got them black satchels out from under your eyes for a change. Think you're ready to shoot some buffalo?
Yeah, that's what we came for.
Jameson thought the hump steak from the fat buffalo cow was the finest he'd ever sunk a tooth in. Ransom King walked over and sat down beside him as he finished breakfast. King was already shaved. He wore clean clothes, although they were rumpled from the trip.
I'm ready to do some shooting this morning, Jameson, if you are.
We'd better pick our hunting ground so we won't be shooting at each other. Shad and I'll go south this morning. Why don't you work north down the creek?
He looked at King's rifle and saw that it was a Sharps like his own.
Well, we'd better learn the sound of each other's rifles. Maybe it'll be important someday if we hear guns that don't belong to us.
Good idea. I'll do my own shooting as far as I can. If my skinners get to catching up with me too fast, Trencher can help me bring down a few.
They waited around camp, helped finish preparations, until Jameson's big pocket watch showed it to be 9 o'clock. There was plenty to do.
Well, let's get started, Chad. They ought to have grazed by now.
With bellies full of the strong grass and the morning sun getting warm, the buffalo would settle down, stop moving around. Listless then, they were less likely to scare away at the roar of the big guns. Jameson slipped on his coat with the deep pockets that held extra shells. He fastened the cartridge belt around his waist, every one of the 32 loops holding a loaded cartridge. Shad Blankenship did the same.
I never have taken a good look at that gun of yours, Shad.
Shad handed it to him. It was a Sharps 45, a 14-pounder with a thick octagonal barrel that could stand the heat of a lot of firing. Jameson rubbed his hands over its smooth finish and read the two words imprinted deeply on the left-hand side of the breech, patented 1869.
You used to carry a 50, didn't you?
Used to be young, too. But for a man of my age, his 14 pounds turns to 40 soon enough. I just got to get a mite closer sometimes, that's all.
The wagons followed them, drawn by 4 mules apiece. 2 mules could do it, but a man never could tell what might be over that next hill in strange country. 4 mules in a run could pull a heap faster than 2. In half an hour, the 2 horsemen rode partway up an eminence, far enough so that they could easily see over it. A couple of 100 buffalo stood or lay scattered under the brow of the hill, some still grazing a little, most of them full and resting, already chewing cuds, lying with noses to the wind.
Fair chance of a good stand down there for both of us, Shad.
The old man nodded. Jameson didn't need to wet his finger and stick it up to get the drift of the breeze. It was out of the northwest and had been all morning. They rode back down from the point and eased a little farther south, so the breeze blew from the buffalo to them. The skinners crawled out of the wagons and squatted in the grass, patiently sharpening their ripping and skinning knives on the steel that each man carried on his belt. One man drank water from a 5-gallon keg that was wrapped in a piece of old woolen blanket, wet to keep it cool. Here the men would wait, out of the way, until the shooting was done. Blair Farley was already shuffling his cards, trying to promote a time-passing game. There was nothing to tie the horses to, but nothing was needed. They had been trained to stand where the reins were dropped. Jameson and Chad left them and walked directly up the side of the little hill. Pausing a moment at the top to look the situation over, they started down again on the other side, walking carefully, directly at the buffalo. It was a peculiarity of the buffalo that he paid little attention to a man afoot, especially if the man walked straight at him. Jameson thought it was probably because the buffalo could detect little motion that way, his eyes being weak and sometimes half grown over with thick hair. Many times, Jameson had walked up within rock-throwing distance of buffalo before they began to shy away. On horseback, he could never have approached so close. The two men got to within 200 yards of the buffalo.
Not far enough. Too close the first time, and they're sure liable to scatter.
Carefully, making as little motion as possible, Jameson sat down, taking off his cartridge belt and laying it on the dry grass before him where he could easily reach it. He removed the coat and laid it out where he could get to the extra cartridges in the pockets and keep the belt loops full. He laid down his canteen, which he might have to use to cool the barrel. He looked at Shad, seated 6 feet from him so they wouldn't be in each other's way. His eyes asked, "Ready?" and Shad nodded. There was usually a leader in any bunch. If this leader moved away, the others would follow him. Without him, the buffalo generally stood around in confusion. There never was any sure way to know which one the leader was. For that, a man had to depend on instinct. A big cow looked around suspiciously, her nose in the air, testing the breeze. Jameson eased down to her prone position, setting up the rest stick over which to lay the heavy barrel of the Big 50. He studied the breeze, thought he knew how much to allow for it. He shoved the cartridge into the breech, took long, deliberate aim, held his breath, and squeezed the trigger. The deep roar was enough to set a man's ears to ringing. The cow jerked violently and began backing up, slinging her head. He had missed the target, he knew. He had shattered her jaw. A few more seconds of this, throwing the blood around that way, and she would stampede the whole bunch. At the heavy boom of the gun, the other buffalo shied. Those which had been lying down jumped up. But they didn't run. They stood in confusion, not knowing what was happening, not seeing any enemy. Jameson aimed, correcting his windage. The puff of dust just behind the cow's shoulder was right where he had tried to hit her. She squatted back, hind legs going limp. She swung her head from side to side, then lay over heavily, kicked a time or two, and sank slowly into death, her little black eyes staring into nothingness. Shad Blankenship squeezed his trigger. Another buffalo staggered a step, then fell. Jameson looked up and saw the white smoke of the gunpowder rising, drifting off into the gentle wind. On a still day, a man could nearly suffocate himself in smoke with the sharps. And no joke about it, he could deafen himself eventually, exposing his ears to the roar of the big guns year in and year out. They settled down to shooting them, taking their time to keep from overheating the guns, yet wasting no time either. Nearly every shot bagged a buffalo, although sometimes it took an extra bullet or two to dispatch one. Instead of running, the other buffalo would look on in bewilderment. After the first few shots, they stopped shying from the roar of the guns. A few even lay back down, losing interest in the strange noise and going back to chewing their cuds.
Good thing we got a little breeze. Keeps them from getting the blood smell.
At length, an old cow began to move away, and it looked for a moment as if the rest of the bunch would follow, breaking up the stand. Jameson drew a bead, allowing more windage for the long shot because she was at least 400 yards away. The first shot stopped her momentarily, sent her squatting. But she got up again and began to move once more, dragging a little. Jameson thought the stand was lost. Then she stopped and turned sideways, looking back as if to find her hidden assailant. Shad's rifle roared at the broad target. The dust puffed from the brown hair was just where it should have been. She went down and stayed down. Jameson looked at the old man in admiration.
Did you ever miss a shot in your life?
Once. Didn't eat for 4 days either.
After a while, lying still in the sun, Jameson could feel sweat work from under his hat and trickle slowly down his dusty face. It burned his eyes. When he rubbed them, he got gunpowder in them from his hands, and that made it worse.
Ow, blast.
His shoulder ached from the recoil from the big rifle. He could feel the intense heat from his heavy gun barrel and knew it needed to cool anyway. Opening the breech block, he picked up the canteen and poured water down the muzzle, jerking his hand away from the scalding steam. When the barrel had cooled some, he pushed the corner of a greased patch into the eyelet of his wiping stick. He ran it into the barrel and worked it up and down to break loose the accumulation of burned powder. He laid the rifle down to let it cool off. Already he could count some 30 buffalo lying dead or dying on the ground. Shad Blankenship was still shooting, waiting as long as 2 minutes sometimes between shots. He wasted precious little powder. It had always been a puzzle to Jameson why the buffalo would stand and take this murderous fire instead of stampeding away. They nosed curiously at the fallen, and now and then a cow hooked at one of the dead. Each time one acted as if it had begun to get the scent of blood, Shad or Jameson brought it down. For 2 hours, the stand held up, the band of buffalo slowly diminishing. At last, the surviving animals commenced to get the blood scent, and then they broke into a run.
Want to follow them up, Gage? They'll settle down in a little while.
Jameson shook his head.
I reckon we've done enough killing for now.
He stood up and walked out among the fallen buffalo. He flinched at the sight of the dead glassy eyes, the bloody mouths and noses that resulted from the lung shots. Here and there, a buffalo still breathed, still kicked. Those Shad and Jameson saw, they finished with their pistols. Flies already were buzzing around the dead, especially those shot earliest, where the blood had crusted and turned black. Shad Blankenship shook his head.
A bloody business, Gage. Man has to get himself a hard stomach to stay in it, and there's few that really enjoy it.
I never have, Shad. In a way, it doesn't hardly seem right. God put them here, and I expect he had a good reason. Now we're killing them off as fast as we can skin them.
It's a business. About the only one left anymore. Man didn't do this, he just about starved to death. If we don't shoot him, somebody else will. It's going to be done regardless.
It's got to be done. It's a bloody job, but I don't reckon it's any worse than killing cattle in a slaughterhouse, except for the waste. And there's not much we can do about the waste. It's too far to market for the meat.
And as long as there's buffalo, there'll never be any settlement. They feed the Indian and keep them fighting. There's no room for the farmer where the buffalo graze. There's no room for the cowman either. It's a question of which we're going to have, the buffalo or the settler. When you look at it that way, it's not much of a question, is it?
They signaled the skinners, who brought up the wagons. Each skinner moved along, testing the sharp blade of his knife across the rump of a fallen cow. If she quivered in reflex, she wasn't quite dead, and he moved on to another. If there was no movement, he set right in to skinning. Shad and Jameson climbed to the top of the hill and sat down there to watch the operation, and to keep an eye out for Indians that might have been drawn by the gunfire. Shad bit himself a fresh chew of tobacco.
Funny thing, ain't it? We talk all the time about civilization, and how do we get it? By killing, that's how. I first come out here, it was a beaver. We trapped beaver so the high-toned boys back east could sport them a beaver hat. Of course, we weren't looking ahead. All we bothered about was making money. But what was really happening, we was getting to know the country. We was opening it up for them that was to come later. When the beaver trade folded, some of us started scouting for immigrant trains and surveyors and one thing and another. And we were shooting game to feed them. Then the hide trade started, and we commenced to killing the buffalo. And all the time we was killing the Indians, too. Killing so we could have civilization. Some way to get it. Like a marshal I seen once come to settle down a wild town. Slams his pistol down on the bar and he says, "We're going to have peace around here if I have to kill every one of you to get it."
Shad shook his rusty head.
And what happens to us old hands then, when civilization does come? We don't fit. We brung it, but they got no place for us. We wind up in jail, or begging, or living off the county. I'd seen many of them old mountain men that-a-way, just drunk themselves to death. They had destroyed the only kind of life they could fit in.
Jameson put his hand on Shad's patched knee.
There'll always be a place for you, Shad, as long as I'm around.
Shad looked him straight in the eyes.
How do you know there'll even be a place for you, Gage?
The autumn weeks drifted by, the skies of an evening taking on that deep horizon line purple that meant winter was nearly here. The hair on the buffalo became thicker now. Before long, there would be good robe hides that fetched an extra price. The hunting was all a man could want. Always, the drying area was covered with a patchwork of hides, sometimes stretching 200 yards along the creek. Each day, the wagons came in off the hunting grounds, loaded with fresh hides, green and heavy, sticky with blood and undried flesh. The handlers pitched them down and spread them out upon the ground, dusting them with poison to keep the bugs away. Then they would stretch them on the grass with the hair side down, securing them by pounding pegs through tiny holes slit in the edge. Here, the hides would stay for 3 or 4 days, sometimes 5 or 6, now that the autumn's daytime heat had largely waned. When well dried, they would be turned over, hair side up. Finally cured, these flint hides would be loaded upon one of the wagons and lashed down, their space on the drying ground given up to fresh hides just coming in.
They're doing mighty well, Shad.
Jameson and Shad Blankenship watched the handlers peg out 40 green hides from that day's shooting.
Never saw hunting ground stand up any better.
Me neither. I only moved camp twice, and then just a little ways up the creek so we wouldn't have so far to hunt and pack hides. Wouldn't be surprised if we were in Dodge before Christmas.
You getting ready to go back, Shad?
Shad pondered a moment, then darkly shook his head.
No, to tell the truth, I ain't. Well, you know what always happens to me when I get to town. This is where I belong at. Even if it is a messy job and a man gets sick of the killing, sometimes I wish I never had to go back. Wish all this had never changed.
He turned to Jameson, melancholy in his pale eyes.
What is it gets into a man, Gage? Even with all the blood and sweat and dirt, this is a heap sight better than being in town, drinking that swill they sell for whiskey, choking to death on tobacco smoke while you're losing everything you own in a crooked poker game. What is it gets into a man and sends him running back to town like an ox to the slaughter, ready to take his whipping again? Why is it a man don't ever have no better sense?
Jameson shrugged. He didn't have an answer to that. He needed one himself. Every time he left town, he fully intended to stay out until it was absolutely necessary that he return, and then to stay only long enough to pick up new supplies. But good intentions weren't enough. Now, already, he was beginning to get that restless itch, to start picturing Dodge in glowing colors. He didn't want it to be that way. He wished he could change it, but there it was.
If only I had something to tie to.
Yonder comes Ransom King in his wagon.
Jameson watched, nodding.
Yeah, good hunter, Shad. He's a crack shot. He can put a bullet in a buffalo about as handy as anybody I ever saw.
Yeah, and he seems to enjoy it, too. Ever watch him when he's got a stand? Shoots for all he's worth. Something takes hold of him, and he loses that nice smile. Worries me sometimes he'll burn up his gun barrel. And when the buffalo run, he jumps on his horse and takes out after him. Strings him out sometimes for a mile or two, like a kid on a picnic.
Gets a lot of buffalo.
And makes the rest of them so wild you can't get within a mile of them on horseback.
King rode in beside his Skinner's wagon and dismounted, a little stiff from the ride. He watched distastefully as they pitched the day's green hides onto the ground. A big drop of half-congealed blood splashed off onto the leg of his trousers.
Damn it! Watch what you're doing!
Quickly, he slapped at the blood with his hands, trying to get it off. Then he rubbed his hands together, scowling darkly at the smear of drying blood on them.
Some of the polish has come out off now, and the brass is beginning to show.
Even in camp, Ransom King managed to stand a head taller than anyone else in appearance. He was the only man who shaved every day without fail. Even Jameson didn't try to do that. Often, Jameson and Shad threw in when the work was heavy, skinning hides or moving them around. But King always found someone else to handle the dirtier details, avoiding the stain that stamped other men with the brand of their trade. Seeing Jameson and Blankenship, he moved toward them, leading his horse. He had his laughing days and his black days. This was a black one. There was no dash or fun about him. He still scowled. He wiped the dust and sweat from his face with a clean handkerchief.
Damn this business anyway.
Jameson tried to ease King's dark mood.
I always thought you liked the hide business. The excitement, the shooting, selling your hides and counting your money.
King shoved the handkerchief back into his pocket. His mouth twisted as he watched his men spreading out the hides.
The shooting, sure. I like the feel of a gun in my hand. Always did. Like the feel of power it gives you. But the rest of it, damn. My stomach turns over every time I get the grease and blood of them on me. And the smell, Jameson, it sticks to a man like death. Get so I hate the sight of the lousy monsters. I'll be glad when the last one is dead and rotted.
Jameson looked at him questioningly.
For a man who hates the business, you've done mighty well at it.
The money, Jameson, the money. You'd be surprised what all I can stand if there's enough money in it.
There hadn't been any trouble during these weeks. Nothing a man could rightly call trouble. Once, a handful of Indians tried to work up to the corral in the dead of night and get off with some horses and mules, but Shad's old black dog stopped that, just as he had done before. The only other trouble was King's man, Trencher. He had been busy enough at first, so that he wasn't much bother to anyone. But later, as camp routine got old, he started getting restless. He began sitting in on Blair Farley's poker games and losing steadily. His IOUs to Farley were mounting up. Trencher sulked around, his eyes narrowed and mean, looking for a chance to stumble over someone's feet. One night, Shad Blankenship was busy tarring a wagon hub and spat a stream of tobacco juice without much attention to where it went. Part of it splashed on Trencher's boots, already thoroughly stained by mud and blood and buffalo grease.
Why, you stinking old coot!
Roughly, Trencher grabbed the old man's thin shoulders and spun him around. He wrapped his fingers in Shad's short beard and jerked Shad's face up close to his own so hard that tears came to Shad's eyes. Jameson saw it from afar and came running, but he didn't need to. Shad raised his boot and stomped down hard on Trencher's instep. Then his knee came up sharply, and Trencher doubled over in agony. Shad slapped him across the face with the tar brush, leaving a heavy black smear. He planted the sole of his boot firmly on Trencher's hip pocket and roughly sent him sprawling under the feet of a mule. Startled, the mule began to jump and kick. Trencher scrambled away on hands and knees, haste making him look ridiculous. Shad's black dog piled in on him to make it worse, his long teeth seeking blood.
Easy, boy.
Men who had seen it started to laugh. But when Trencher stood up, scowling and dusting himself, his furious eyes stabbing at them through the smear of tar, they shut up. He turned back to Shad, crouching a little. But Shad stood his ground, his big fist clenched around a wrench.
By Judas Priest, I was gouging eyes and biting ears before you was ever weaned. Next time you come at me, bucko, you better have a doctor handy.
For a moment, they glared at each other. Shad didn't give an inch. Presently, Trencher turned and stalked away. From then on, he never came at Shad again. He often eyed him from a distance, a goading hatred in his heavy face. But he always gave Shad plenty of air.
Yeah, I reckon I handled that.
I reckon you did, but you better watch your back from now on. Trencher looks like he'd have the memory of a bull elephant.
Blair Farley had been watching, hands tucked into the waistband beneath his heavy paunch. Jameson motioned him aside.
You caused this. You and those poker games of yours caused me any more trouble like this, and I'll let you walk back to Dodge.
Oh, it ain't my fault if Trencher's got his dander up.
No? Well, I'll tell you something else that had better set you to thinking. You haven't got a friend left in camp, Farley. Most of them hate you because you've been winning their money. We're a long way from town. We ever get in a scrap with Indians, what's to keep somebody from potting you during the excitement? Then nobody would owe anything.
You don't think somebody would.
And you know these men. What do you think?
Farley walked away, visibly shaken by a thought that had never come to him before. Jameson heard someone ask him about a poker game, and Farley turned it down. Later, Jameson spoke to Ransom King about Trencher. King listened, frowning in thought.
I'll let him shoot a few buffalo. That's all he needs. Let him kill something, and it drains the meanness out of him for a while.
Jameson shook his head wonderingly.
Well, I guess you know him, but you've got a mighty peculiar taste in helpers.
I don't pretend to like him, Jameson. He's crude, and he's mean. But I can handle him, and he's a good man for the job he does. As long as I make money, I can tolerate anything or anybody.
There finally came a time when the buffalo were thinning. The bunches were so small now that Jameson and Shad never got to hunt together anymore. They separated, each taking a wagon and his own skinners, trying only to keep within the sound of each other's guns. There had been some Indian sign lately, and Jameson's eyes constantly searched the skyline.
It's been the time of year that Comanches like to go south and raid the settlements. That's maybe why we ain't seen much of them. But they'll be back here for the winter.
One day, after Jameson had killed enough buffalo for his skinners to have an afternoon's work, he sought out Shad Blankenship and found him already through, sitting on a rise watching his men.
Let's go hunt a new campsite, Shad. One where there'll be more buffalo.
They set out up the creek. There were buffalo all right, but badly scattered. They rode 10 miles, maybe 12, and finally reached the rocky head of the creek, where a strong stream of cold, clear water burst forth from a fissure in the rocks to form a year-round spring. Up here were more buffalo. Jameson liked the idea of camping by the spring. It was a good place, with lots of hackberry, stunted elm, and most of all, the big cottonwoods. In places, the buffaloes had rubbed the trunks almost slick, getting rid of the spring shed hair with its itchy lice and ticks. Even after all these months, a tuft of shed hair still stuck here and there. Shad Blankenship was worried.
Look at them buffalo. Turn tail and run as quick as they see us. They ain't been so wild back down the creek. These buffalo has been hunted, Gage. Hunted on horseback.
Indians, you think?
What else? Maybe we better have us a look around.
They skirted the spring and eased southward. Presently, Jameson pulled up short, tilting his head to listen.
Shad, did you hear something?
Shad shook his head.
I'm getting so deaf I can't hear thunder.
Gage listened a little, finally stepping down and dropping the reins, standing free of the horse so not even the squeak of the saddle would keep him from hearing. The sound grew. It was like thunder, but it rolled steadily without a break, gradually swelling louder. Soon Gage could feel the ground begin to tremble a little beneath his feet.
Stampede! Buffalo stampede!
His heart quickened. He stepped back into the stirrup and swung up, automatically looking about him for a place of escape and seeing little but the rolling prairie, the stream, the spring, nothing that would stop a crushing tide of buffalo.
We gotta make a run for it, Chad. Let's get over that rise yonder so we can see how they're heading. Maybe we can get out of the way before they get here.
They spurred up over the rise. Even before they reached the top, Jameson could see the cloud of dust that rose into the plain sky. Then he saw the buffalo coming fast, directly toward them.
Lord, must be 10,000 head!
They were fanned out over a half-mile front. Jameson's bay horse was fidgeting nervously, wanting to run. Jameson felt his own pulse pounding.
That way, Sam!
Jameson pointed.
Maybe we can get past the edge of the herd before they run us down. Ha!
He spurred then, spurred hard, and the bay horse answered with speed. His long legs reached out. Jameson knew this was the payoff for his having bought a horse of strong body and strong lungs. Behind him, he could almost feel the breath of the buffalo on the back of his neck. It was the movement of air set in motion by the surging body of the stampeding herd. Beside him, Shad was leaning over in the saddle, talking to his dun horse, urging him to more speed. Jameson looked back once at this thundering black sea of buffalo that would pound horse and man to powder if ever they made a misstep, if ever they fell in the path of this living avalanche. He saw the bobbing black heads, the black eyes, the little streams of saliva that trailed from the mouths of the running animals. He could feel the fear that swept the buffalo, that kept them surging forward, and it became his own fear, swelling in his chest, choking off his breath. Little by little, the spurring riders worked toward the edge of the herd. Some of the leaders were even with them now, running along beside them. Jameson looked back often, gauging how much farther they had to go, already feeling the power begin to play out in the big bay horse beneath him. He kept urging the horse on. And finally...
We're clear, Shad!
They pulled up then to let the herd roar past them. A rush of wind and dust whipped their faces. The horses danced fearfully, still strung high from the long, hard run. In a little while, the herd had gone on past. Down there somewhere, the buffalo would run themselves out, and they would settle down to graze again, as peaceful as if nothing had happened.
I reckon what touched them off.
Shad was trying to rub the dust from his watering eyes.
I've got a sneaking idea.
They trotted their horses a little, easing them down to a walk, cooling them gradually. The sound of the stampede gone, there was nothing left to show for it but a wide swath of trampled grass and a lingering of stifling dust that slowly drifted out on the easy breeze. Now Jameson began to hear something else.
Shooting, Chad. And I thought I heard somebody yell, coming from somewhere across that hill yonder.
Dismounting and leading their horses, the two men cautiously worked up the hillside. They dropped the horses' reins and crouched as they neared the top, keeping low to present as little a silhouette as possible. Shad Blankenship dropped to his belly.
Look yonder, Gage. Ever see such a sight in your life?
Down there, a large group of Comanche warriors, stripped to breech clouts and all mounted on good horses, had driven a group of buffalo into a mass. Now they circled them, the dozens of hooves churning up a billowing cloud of dust to drift away with the wind. Most of the Indians loosed arrows into the herd as rapidly as they could restring their bows. Now and again, as a buffalo made a rush to get out of the surround, a warrior charged after him with a lance. Those few Indians who had rifles were using them principally on the animals which broke into a run.
This is something, Chad.
Jameson was glad he had brought the binoculars out of his saddlebags. He raised them to his eyes and watched the lancer lope up behind a running buffalo, holding the lance across his body, the off end the highest, his knees tucked under a rope wound around the horse's body. When he had gained the position he wanted, he thrust downward with the lance, shoving it hard, then pulling it out again as the buffalo faltered. The lancer pierced the animal a second time, pushing in and holding the lance until the buffalo went down. He saw a bowman ride in close and loose an arrow at a running bull. As the missile drove home, the buffalo turned sharply, heading into the horse, sending it rolling. The Indian scrambled to his feet, grabbing his fallen bow and what spilled arrows he could snatch off the ground. In desperation, he sent arrow after arrow into the charging animal, so rapidly Jameson lost count. The buffalo went to its knees, still hooking at the Indian. The warrior walked back to his horse, carefully looked him over for injuries, then remounted and returned to the slaughter.
I never saw that before.
Not a single animal escaped the Comanches. Now the fun was over and the work part began. Other Indians materialized out of a brushy draw to start the skinning, the butchering of the meat. Jameson watched, fascinated, the skilled hands of the red men. These were the Comanches, savage, brutal. Yet truly, they were children of the land, nomads, akin to nature and the creatures in a way the white man could never be, following the rains, following the grass, following the buffalo. Shad nudged Jameson.
This ain't the girly show at no fancy dance hall, young'un. They find out we're up here. We're liable to put on a little show ourselves.
Yeah, I wonder where their camp is.
Jameson still watched through the binoculars.
Don't matter to me. I ain't been invited and don't aim to go.
Jameson grinned at him. Shad wasn't scared, but he had the deeply ingrained caution that had kept his hair on through 40 years of dodging Indians.
I've got a notion to trail them, at least far enough to locate their camp. I'd rather find it now than stumble on it someday by accident.
The wrinkles deepened in Shad's ruddy face as he narrowed his eyes, looking down upon the Comanches.
Well, whatever you say, you're the wagon master. We better step soft, though. Me, I'm an old man, and I've lived out a full life, but you're still owing the house.
The Indians brought up pack horses. Rolling the meat in the fresh hides, they loaded it onto the horses and headed out, leaving little but scattered patches of blackened blood to show where the slaughter had taken place.
They don't waste much, do they, Shad?
Shad shook his head.
Winter coming on. They can't afford to.